We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey, RotoViz Radio listener. This is Curtis Patrick from the Dynasty Command Center podcast, and I've got a special deal for you today. Go to RotoViz.com. Click the subscribe button, put the 12-month subscription in your cart, and use promo code RVRadio2021. That's RVRadio2021, and you're going to save 10%. Taking advantage of this deal, getting your hands on what's included in the package, is the best way to enhance your performance this year. So go to rotoviz.com and subscribe now.
Mahomes has the time, delivers perfectly downfield, touchdown, Patrick Mahomes with a rope,
this one, Adams, touchdown, this time going deep for Beckham Jr.,
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to RotoViz Overtime on RotoViz Radio, brought to you by Blue Wire. My name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. As always, I'm joined by my co-host here on RotoViz Overtime. It is Sean Siegel. Sean, another weekend. Unfortunately, recording this on Tuesday, Aaron Rodgers hasn't turned up to training camp, so the Packers saga continues. The less said about it, I think, the better at this point, but still hopeful that things can be resolved, but... That's me with my glass three quarters full, I think, at this point. How's things this week, Sean?
Good. Continuing to move through these drafts. We've got three great shows for people this week. We have Julio Jones on a new team. Unfortunately, probably knocking down A.J. Brown just a little bit, but folks who have taken the value on Ryan Tannehill have to be pretty excited. That gives him a little bit more upside. Yeah, lots of best ball, lots of dynasty. We're going to talk about the RotoViz Triflex Dynasty League again today. Obviously, we love this format. You know, you have the super flex, you have the tight end premium, you have the three starting wide receivers, you've got a couple more flexes. And one of the fun things about today's show is that we were asked slash given permission by one of the other owners in this league that Blair and I recently drafted in to discuss his team, his moves, kind of what he did, what he should have done differently. And we normally try and stay away from this type of thing a little bit. No one wants to play in a league with someone who's then going to criticize them publicly or critique their team, say, oh, they should have done this, they should have done that. But at the same time, it could be a fun exercise if someone is up for it and is actually kind of looking forward to that. Again, we'll look at this with a lot of humility, because one of the things that we see and that we know is that even if you played hundreds and hundreds of leagues, which we've done and had pretty good success, which I think that we can say is the case, you don't know what's going to happen in the future, right? And sometimes approaches that other people take work extremely well, work better than you thought that they would. So, you know, we want to approach this knowing that the things that we say might not turn out to be the case. At the same time, this is a good team. So it's not like we're going to be like, oh, we should have done this, that differently. But it's interesting to see the moves that someone else makes, the strategy that someone else has taken. So we'll go through that. And I think this will be fun because listeners are fairly familiar with how we like to draft at this point. So it'll be cool to go through and look at how another team did it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this one. And obviously the Triflex Leagues, we have been talking about them quite a bit recently, a new format between RotoViz and the FFPC. But, you know, we've broken down Sean and Blair's team, but we're going to have a look at it here now from another angle. And it can be very valuable if you're looking at getting into some of these leagues, or if you're in a different format, even seeing how the ADP and how the draft grids have shook out over the last, you know, number of weeks, number of months, and gives you an idea of if you're attempting to draft in a certain way or trade back, we can go ahead and do that. And I've got a lot of messages on Twitter, private messages, some of the emails over to rotovizradio@gmail.com as well, asking questions about the Triflex leagues. And as we've mentioned on shows previously, whatever you're looking for content on RotoViz Overtime, send them our way and we'll look to implement them. And this is a prime example of that. So, Sean, I'll let you go in. You were involved, obviously, in the draft, but I'm going to let you take the initiative as to which way we want to go. Do we want to start with just round one, work our way down? Do we want to look at the team overall? And do we want to break down those trades at the same time?
Yeah, let's kind of look at how this team developed, because I think that the options that a manager had when they had to make certain decisions really dictate and give a direction for, you know, how that person is going to go as they move through the rest of the draft. To look at it at the end and say, oh, it should have made these changes. Some of those changes weren't necessarily available. Now, this was cool in terms of going back through and looking at it. Blair and I made 13 trades. Listeners know we had no picks in the first three rounds. We had 19 picks in the first 12 rounds. A young team, a team that we think can win now, could win in the future. This is a little bit different team, but also a very heavy trade team. So we made 13 trades during the draft for our team. This one I made 14 trades. And so you're going to get a lot of movement around to sort of make his picks. Now, as I discussed with him during the course of the draft, we had some good banter throughout. This is someone who's played a lot at FFPC League, so has a lot of experience. But is moving into the dynasty portion of it for the first time. So one of the things that he was asking as well is, you know, this is a team that I would feel very comfortable with in redraft. I think it would win for me. You know, what are some of the changes that I may have done or that I should have made for dynasty? What are the things that I should have done differently because this is a dynasty format? And we'll look at that a little bit too. But to start off with, he has the 104. You're going to be able to get a stud QB at that point. Also, just right off the bat, makes this trade that essentially ends up being Josh Allen, Waddle, Rondell Moore, and then a 20th round pick for Dobbins, Swift, Kmet, and Winston. So essentially what this is trading the 208 and the 305 in order to move up to the 103. Now, didn't actually have to pay too much. I think if you look at this within the context of a lot of the other trades that went down, moving up into that range is usually more expensive. So I consider this to be a pretty big win right off the bat. So that gives him a chance to take two of the star quarterbacks. He starts out with Josh Allen and Kyler Murray. Anytime that you're in a Superflex Dynasty League and you get to start out with these two guys, then, I mean, you're really set, right? I mean, this team should be competitive for a long time. It's got those high-end scores at the quarterback position, even more important than high-end scores at the running back position, again, in this particular format. So that's a huge win, and right off the bat looks like one of the best teams. The second thing, Colin, that he does here is he trades the 608 for the 308, and it gives up a first-round pick. Now, one of the things that happens, you know, once you trade your second and third round pick in order to get up and get that second QB, you don't have a lot of early picks here, so you're looking to make some moves. He selects Stephon Diggs. I think that Diggs and Tyreek Hill, for any sort of dynasty teams that are trying to win in year one, those are really the top two guys. Now, they're not necessarily our top two guys for the long term, but for win now teams, those are the two guys that you have to be looking at, again, with that quarterback situation in Green Bay that you referenced. I like Diggs here. That's, you know, at the end of the third round, that's a fantastic value. But looking at what the give up is there, Chase Claypool goes in that spot later on. You've traded away a future first round pick. You're already set with those two QBs, and now you have Diggs. And so you're thinking to yourself, okay, my first round pick is going to be in the second half of round one. But as we've discussed in Superflex, the entire first round is fairly valuable. Now, I think this is market value for this pick, and I love Diggs. What are your thoughts on paying a future first rounder to essentially only move up three rounds, you know, but within the context of the fact that these three rounds are very valuable rounds when you're trying to make a trade?
Yeah, they're very valuable. And we, you know, as we talked about with your team, there'll be some similarities, but there's also going to be a couple of these that are obviously very different, because I really do like, if you're going to be aggressive and go and get that second stud quarterback, that really is going to set you up for success. But again, we've been looking at moving back in that first round and, you know, picking up some value and still being able to get, you know, maybe not the real top end, but the level just below that of the quarterback position. But I did really like that trade for the value that he got it at. It seemed to be a little bit reduced from what we would normally see, you know, the asking price there. Moving up then, obviously we both like Stephon Diggs, but giving up that future first might be where you mentioned that mindset of being you know, used to maybe the FFPC for season long leagues or best ball leagues, and maybe when we get in and we maybe don't value that first round pick as much as we could, I think that I would be probably holding off on that unless I was getting into the second round a little bit. But again, I like the aggressive nature of going and getting the guys that you want, but I think I would have stood firm with where I was, because as we've seen with your team, that fourth through 10th round range, there's a huge amount of value to be had there. So staying placed at that sixth round pick, I think we could still, and as you mentioned, getting Claypool there, I think could have been the better value.
Yeah, and one of the things that we do see here is that Diggs has fallen a little bit. So that's a good value on Diggs. So it's a little bit more than the three rounds in terms of what the ADP actually suggests for this. But that's maybe the first move where it's not a bad move. I think it could definitely pan out right away, but it's the first move where we're looking at it and thinking, okay, there's a risk there. I mean, that's not a home run even with Diggs. If that pick is used on someone other than Diggs, then I think it becomes even a much more clear situation where not making the trade would have been the right way. But who you pick does matter, right? So I love Diggs there. The next move is a trade really moving up almost a full round again from late in round four to late in round three, and selecting Devontae Adams. The pick later on becomes Chark, the one where he has to move down, and he gives up Michael Thomas, Rondale Moore, a future third round pick. Now, Moore went super early. So one of the things I'm kind of giving as we go through this, we'd like to do to put player values onto the pick values so people have a feel for that. Moore went about three rounds ahead of ADP in this draft. So keep that in mind as you're thinking about it. Now, three rounds above ADP, that's about where I have more value. Actually, I have more value even ahead of that. So three rounds of ADP, I don't think is actually incorrect, but it is earlier in this draft when you're kind of thinking about these spots. A future three, not nearly as big a deal as a future one. I like this because I would much rather have Devontae Adams than Michael Thomas, even with the situation. I mean, Aaron Rodgers could come back. Drew Brees is not going to, right? So I think that's a fairly good move, and especially with the fact that, you know, when you have to move down a little bit and what you get is DJ Chark, then, you know, we have to be happy with that as well. One of the things to keep in mind, though, as we move out of all of these future picks, that because this is a situation where there is a cut down, there will be veteran players in the future rookie draft. And again, with the Superflex moving the values down, that a future three is something that does still have some value.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
The next move we have here is a trade where we move from the middle of round five into the end of round four. And for that, he has to move back a round and a half in that 7-8 round range. Again, this is one where, because of the player selected, I like this quite a bit. He ends up getting Terry McLaurin. Colin, I know this is one of your favorite guys. And then with the move back, that ends up being the spot for Deebo Samuel. Now, we made a trade with him later on, and we were actually the team that picked Deebo. But the guys who went on the other spots, Mark Andrews and Trey Sermon, Sermon could be a superstar. He could be a completely wasted pick, a massive range of outcomes for that one. Mark Andrews, a fantastic fit, I think, for this format, although there will definitely be some people who tell you that because of the tight end premium, yeah, you have to have tight ends. You need to have elite tight ends if you want to win FFPC Dynasty. Maybe Andrews isn't the guy for that, although he's going to be a high-scoring tight end for you. Colin, do you like this move? Is McLaurin enough of a star to sort of knock down what you're going to get at tight end?
I think so. The one thing that's interesting here is, and I know we've talked about Brandon Ayuk, we'll be talking about him in a moment again and how much we like him, but I think Deebo Samuel has almost been overlooked as well. Like, I would rather have Ayuk over Deebo Samuel, but I think that he's still a really, really good young wide receiver to have on your roster. So I like the pairing of him and McLaurin, and I think McLaurin, with everything that's going on with Washington, I think he's in a much better situation now than he would have been 12 months ago or even 24 months ago. So I really like that pick. Andrews is very interesting because this time last year we were all in on Andrews, and that Baltimore Ravens offense really stank the place up compared to what it had done the previous year when they had just a phenomenal season. They had an MVP quarterback and Lamar Jackson. Now we're in a situation where we're kind of discounting a lot of the parts of that offense and not being as excited about Mark Andrews this year. And I still think there's an upside to be had there. So I really like having him in the FFPC format. So you mentioned Sermon could be worth very, very little in a very short space of time, or could have that value go through the roof. But as much as I would like to have a tight end in the FFPC, and as much as I think Andrews is still in a good enough spot with the Ravens, I would much rather the wide receiver side here.
Now, the controversial trade, right? Now, the exciting, completely roster reconstructing trade, where that earlier move for Kyler Murray now gets turned around, and Murray is sent along with a couple of picks that turn into Terrace Marshall and De'Ami Brown. And in return, he gets picks that become Joe Mixon, Brandon Ayuk, Chris Carson, and an entire slate of rookie picks, picks 1 through 7 from 2022. And in order to discuss that, you know, we're trying not to look too much at other teams who haven't asked us to participate in this. But one of the reasons why this trade was made and these picks were valued is that the original owner of these picks went all in on an aggressive strategy of moving up and taking a lot of running backs early. And as a result of that, their team doesn't have a lot of depth, doesn't have tight end QBs. And so it could very easily work out. At the same time, it's a very fragile team, a lot of risk. You know, if anything happens to those running backs, if the quarterbacks who ended up getting drafted, a Ben Roethlisberger and a Jameis Winston, I believe, you know, if those guys don't come through, then these picks look like they'll be toward the top. Now, again, you can get in a lot of trouble assuming that picks are going to be in a certain part of the draft. There are two or three teams that are very clearly playing for the future, and so you know, they could sort of intentionally work their way down into those top couple of picks. And then you're like, okay, well, these picks are the 103, 104, you know, 204, 304, as opposed to the, you know, 101, 201, 301. You know, that will potentially make a difference depending on how next year's draft play out. Now, we already have a little bit of a sense of what that will look like, but we do know that this final year before that draft is going to change things dramatically. So we don't know exactly what the depth will look like, where the strongest areas will be in that draft. But that does come into play here. And so that gives us a feel for how this team changes. You get a couple of running backs who are going to be win now. Again, Ayuk was on a pick that was subsequently traded, so that he doesn't end up on the team, but gets a good spot for that. You lose Kyler Murray. What are your thoughts here on Murray for the long haul versus being able to really build out a full team? You get those running backs. You have the future picks that you can use on QB if you need to. We're in a format here, and one of the kind of nice things about the RotoViz TriFlex leagues is that you can only take three quarterbacks, right? And so everybody is going to really get a shot at it. Now, we know that not all teams will get three starting QBs, but the fact that you can only take three means that the second and third tier really do tend to drop fairly late. So it's harder to get caught out unless you intentionally take crazy risk over and over and over and just simply refuse to draft a QB. And so, you know, you're going to be able to fill that Murray slot, but you're not going to be filling him with Murray.
Yeah, I know there's a lot of picks to refuse, you know, in terms of basically the whole slate for next year. But I think making the move up in the, you know, to get the quarterbacks, the two quarterbacks in the first round, I think we're kind of backing out of that strategy a little bit here then from the aggression point of view in terms of you're picking up the 411, the 502, and the 611 in this draft. And then you're giving up the 905 and the 1305. So there is a quite a bit of movement happening there. But I think the reason you try and do that in the first round is to build those pieces and have that foundation. And you're moving out of it a little bit to have that success then in the future with the 2022 draft. So I after making that move in round one, would more than likely have stuck with Kyler Murray. And when we're talking about one of those quarterbacks at the very top end off the draft board, you know, Josh Allen, Kyler Murray, for example, and they were the two that he went with, I think the advantage of having those is a lot superior than having those rookie draft picks next year. But it's a challenging one just due to the sheer volume of picks, but I think I would rather be on the Murray side on this one.
And this is an interesting one for me as well, because we were also a little bit in the mix for Kyler Murray, or at least it had suggested we had some interest. Now, the trade offer that he came back to me with, that he said it would be something that he would be able to take instantly, even included quite a bit more value than that. And so when that ended up being the trade, I was thinking, we might have been back in it for, you know, at that level. However, it still would have been difficult because it didn't necessarily fit exactly what we wanted to do. Now, one of the things that I talked about in the article, and we've talked about this on the show in the past, but the actual article for the website came out yesterday, looking at the trades, looking how to make trades, why we did certain things. 11 of our 13 trades were trades back. We did make a couple of moves up. We made the move up to get Travis Etienne. Making a move for someone like Murray was something we would have considered even within the context of the move back strategy. So we want to maintain flexibility, make sure that if there's someone like a Kyler Murray that we can do that. Looking at the seventh trade, the interesting thing here is we do actually make a trade with him. We get all of those rookie picks that we just discussed. We got the pick that we used on Deebo Samuel, and he got Miles Sanders and the pick that ended up being Keenan Allen. Now, immediately retraded that, traded Allen, a future R3, future round 7, for Amari Cooper. So, ends up getting Miles Sanders and Amari Cooper to go along with the other players from that group. I think that he made the right move in terms of making this trade and having the win now approach. I'm not sure that Miles Sanders is the guy I would have taken at the 507. Now you look at the picks immediately after that, David Montgomery, don't like that one. Mike Evans was drafted about a round ahead of ADP. So, you know, he's probably not in the mix there. Josh Jacobs, don't like that one. Matthew Stafford, now that you've moved Kyler Murray, maybe Stafford is interesting there. Allen Robinson, Tua, and then Amari Cooper, his own pick back around. And then we had a couple of picks of Devontae Smith, Noah Fant. I think that the picks that we made are the guys that I like. And so I probably would have preferred them there. I think that Chris Godwin, someone who perhaps is a little bit more interesting, if Godwin had been the pick instead of Amari Cooper, then, you know, maybe that would have made the trades balances. So I think that the picks made or the trade made makes sense. I think that adding Miles Sanders with the other running backs on the team, from a dynasty standpoint, I think this is an area into wide receiver. Now, the interesting thing again here is that he immediately capitalizes on this by moving Devontae Adams, who has the Rodgers red flag, moves Miles Sanders, who has some interesting guys behind him now, and is in an offense where maybe they don't dump the ball off to the running back and really neutralize most of his value. So Sanders is someone, again, with a very wide range of outcomes where he could jump back into that mix that we currently see with guys like Cam Akers and DeAndre Swift, or it could be someone where a year from now it has very little value at all. He makes the move here, gets Darren Waller back, who was originally picked at the 405 and had really fallen at that point. Waller should be going ahead of the 405, so more of a third round type of value. and the pick that becomes Kenny Golladay. So now we've moved back into a situation where, as opposed to having Sanders, who I think is not a great use of the overall value, we have Golladay. Golladay, much more a win now player. Now, I discussed this with him. He thinks that Golladay has a very wide range of outcomes. I would agree with that, but I think that all of these outcomes on the positive side are from a win now perspective. Darren Waller, a home run. So I like the move here. And this is another addition with Golladay. We're pointing very much to the 2021 season. All of those future picks are now gone. Most of his top picks are now gone. And that really informs what happens next, where Kyler Murray was traded away. Now he gets two very good values in Ryan Tannehill at the 705, Kirk Cousins at the 903. This was an odd draft where QBs tended to fall, but immediately after these picks, some guys who hadn't fallen were gone. So the value that he got relative to ADP on these two QB picks was excellent. And now, obviously, the Titans also have Julio Jones, so Tannehill becomes even more valuable. This is more like a fifth-round value in the middle of round seven. Colin, I think that you and I would both still prefer to get Murray. At the same time, we like the value that he got for Murray. And so now that you have Tannehill and Cousins to also go with Josh Allen, is this a sort of a three-headed monster that you can really get behind, or you still prefer to have that young QB?
Yeah, I'm still not gone on Cousins, but at that value, I think it's a smart pick. This would kind of fit back into what my strategy would have been at the start of the draft, would have been to take the one superstar quarterback at his original pick, not make the trade up, and then add these two guys in at this point. I think would have been more of the approach I would have took from the start of the draft. But as things have played out, this is the right move. And I really did like the Waller-Golladay move prior as well. I think that makes a lot of sense, linking it back to what you mentioned about Miles Sanders and that pick as well.
I think the only thing that I would look at here is that Kirk Cousins does have the potential to have his window shut down very quickly. He's had some very nice seasons. Last year had both Justin Jefferson and Adam Thielen toward the top of the wide receiver leaderboard. Anyone who can do that is not, you know, just the guy. I mean, that's not a simple thing to do for an NFL quarterback. At the same time, he's had some bad seasons. He's got a weaker arm. He's getting a little bit older. There was a little bit of scuttlebutt that the Vikings might decide to make a move this season. And so again, we're looking at that somewhat smaller window. If we're really pushing to win now, someone like a Ryan Fitzpatrick goes in the middle of round 12. I think that Fitzpatrick will put up more points in 2021. That would have been another possible way to go there. And then you look at some of the people drafted immediately after Cousins, and then you do have Thielen, you have Tyler Boyd, you've got Irv Smith, who could use, if you like that breakout tight end potential. I think that he's going a little bit early, but for believers in him, that's an option. So some other potential players there, but the overall structure looking very good at this point. And then we get some of the moves to kind of bolster the win now element of it, where the next trade is one where he loses the pick that becomes Roethlisberger and three late picks, gets the picks that become Darrell Henderson, Gainwell, Darrington Evans. Those are three of our guys, especially Henderson and Evans there. We love them from a zero running back type of perspective. The next trade brings him Hines. This is another trade with us, and we use the picks that we got on KJ Hamler and Tarik Cohen. And so now, Colin, we get into the situation where this is the final roster. We've got Allen, Tannehill, Cousins at QB. We have the main running backs as Joe Mixon and Chris Carson, with a lot of good value behind them to offer protection, but also some more upside if things break the right way. You have Hines, you have Henderson, Madison, Evans, Gainwell. Then at wide receiver, a lot of veteran value in Stephon Diggs, Michael Thomas, Kenny Golladay, Amari Cooper, Terry McLaurin, DJ Chark. We talk all the time about this being a start five format, and he's got six guys right there who could be impact players. I think that's the bare minimum that you need, but also those six guys are not the type. I mean, Blair and I have 7 to 9 potential wide receiver starters. If a little bit of the late guys emerge, we're going to have a real juggernaut at that position, but we don't have the top end guys like this roster has. So if you have six guys from that group, you're going to put up a lot of points. And then at tight end, Waller with Jared Cook offering some protection. So I really like the way this roster has come together. And then I think my only questions would really be, you know, what's the plan for as these guys get older? Because all of the players on this roster are going to see their trade value decline. Now, Josh Allen should hold on to his, but when you're drafted at the 103, you know, really all you can do is drop. Now, if all you do is drop into the 107, 108 range, then you're fine. If you drop back into rounds two or three, that's a little bit of a different story. We know these wide receivers are going to hold their value decently, but they're not going to rise in value. Joe Mixon, a potential riser, although the rise is capped by the fact that he's going to be rising into what a lot of people call the age cliff. We know it's really more a matter of sort of a scenario-based or contingent situation where once the value falls, it really falls in a hurry. It's not even necessarily as related to age as simply the fact that, you know, you're going to get injured, you no longer have the high-end value, your team uses you a little bit less, that value can collapse. Chris Carson, a similar situation. And then you look at the tight end again, and Waller, someone who is going to see his trade value decline because it almost has to. I mean, he just came off of the perfect tight end season. It's going to be hard to meet that standard. So I like this team for winning in 2021, winning in 2022. If you do that, then you pay off your entry fee. And so you can go enter more leagues. You can get back into it there. My other question would possibly be at the running back position. Helen, what are your thoughts about adding this running back depth? Now, we know if we're trying to win in 2021, this year, that we do have to have two quality starters, Mixon, Carson. Those guys have some red flags. There's no guarantee that they're going to be around. So to have Hines, Henderson, Evans backing them up, someone like an Alexander Mattison who could still be a big-time guy if anything happens to Dalvin Cook, you have some options there, but you've used the picks. And again, these picks are not in an extremely valuable area, and they're guys that we love, right? I mean, these are our preferred players, but there might have been an opportunity to add a little bit more wide receiver depth or to add some guys who really would have increasing trade value. What are your thoughts about where we are now versus where we're going and how the positional balance is here?
Yeah, that's my concern, is the age profile, obviously, with, you know, Thomas, Galladay, even Cooper and Diggs. Those, and you talk about the, you know, perpetual reloading or keeping the team in contention, we're going to see guys like that lose that value, and we're going to see Cook lose whatever value he is remaining. But in terms of the running backs, I think we could have taken wide receivers with those top-end picks in Mixon and Carson. And I think what's going to happen with the tri-flex leagues is I think the wide receiver position will become more valuable as the leagues develop, and it's going to be a case that being able to start five of those wide receivers or really ramp up your wide receiver production is going to eclipse what's left with those two running back positions. And I think being able to stack that lineup at wide receiver each and every week is going to be the way to go moving forward. And that's, and I know that's our approach in going for the wide receiver maybe over the running back, but with the picks invested there, I think we could have went for that approach and maybe addressed the running back position a little bit later when maybe we get into training camp and people realize that their wide receivers maybe aren't going to have the depth that they need, and we could maybe move them for one of those running backs then. But that would just be me being picky. Overall, the roster does look to be pretty win now over the next two seasons, but the balance you mentioned in terms of we have really filled out, it's kind of a flat balance between the running backs and the wide receivers. And I think with the way that we can really ramp up the amount of wide receivers we're starting here, I think we could put one or two of those into the wide receiver position.
It's also sort of an interesting mix between the starting running backs and a zero running back approach later. I'm not sure if you need both elements, although again, if you're trying to win now in Dynasty and you put so much in that direction, you can't take a lot of risks, because if the team doesn't win now, then it's a buckle, right? So you have to have that protection at the running back position. I would have loved to see what this roster looked like if he'd stayed with Kyler Murray and gone more with a zero running back approach as opposed to taking both Mixon and Carson, maybe one of those two guys, and then trying to rely on the rest of those picks to fill in that second spot. What do you end up with then in terms of the overall lineup? Now, he doesn't have the volume of wide receivers that a lot of the other managers in this league use. There were a handful of guys who really just went wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver, wide receiver, and have a ton of wide receiver depth in addition to the starters. And so it's actually very impressive that he put this together this much wide receiver value on a team that also has high-end guys at the other positions, right? So I think that this team is probably in the best position to win this first season. There are a couple of other teams that are close. There are some teams that are built for the long haul that might actually see their window arrive earlier than they're planning. I think that one of the things that can happen when you build a great young team is sometimes that team arrives early. If that happens, then the depth of teams competing, you know, for the inaugural title will rise. One of the things that you're really hoping to see when you play for Win Now is that most of the rest of the owners are not, because the smaller number of teams who are trying to win in the first year, the more that this Win Now approach is extremely effective. I think that the overall roster here is great. I think that the balance between positions is fantastic. I think it's got a ton of upside. The interesting thing here, I think, will be the journey in year two, in year three. Is he able to trade out of some of these wide receivers who may hold their value? Does Joe Mixon have the mega season that's possible? One of the things that's interesting with Mixon, and I talked about this a little bit in some of these high stakes best ball leagues that I'm in, is that Mixon, while he's probably an inferior player to a lot of the guys going in that range, because that Bengals offense, at least we think, is going to be so good that, I mean, you have the potential for a 15 to 20 touchdown season, right? I mean, you got the potential for a touchdown season similar to what Aaron Jones did a couple of years ago. And it doesn't necessarily matter what else you're doing if that's the case. If you're often running into the offensive line and falling down, if you're catching the pass, running 15 yards with no one around you, and then the first person tackles you, all those things actually don't matter, right? Because you still caught a pass and ran 15 yards. You still ended up scoring the touchdown. The fact that you're slow, don't have a lot of agility, you're not making a lot of guys miss, you're not actually hitting the hole and running to daylight. I mean, Mixon is one of these guys who isn't going to break a lot of tackles in the sense that it really turns into something, right? I mean, there may be some churning at the offensive line a little bit, like David Montgomery, where, like, okay, there are broken tackles, but you're not actually running anywhere. And there are not going to be these big plays where you're running for 50, 60-yard touchdowns. But the well-rounded element of his profile, where he's an okay running back, he's an okay pass catcher, and he's going to be the clear starter. Everything you hear out of Cincinnati is that he is the guy that's going to have a huge number of touches until he inevitably gets hurt. He's going to score a bunch of touchdowns. If Joe Mixon does that, can you then trade out of him? The point here with this team is, as we go further, are there guys who can increase in trade value that you could move to kind of expand or extend your window? McLaurin and Chark, I think, are the other really interesting players from that perspective. If Washington's offense with Fitzpatrick blows up, then McLaurin could jump two rounds next season. If the Jaguars with Trevor Lawrence blow up, then DJ Chark could, you know, jump two, three, maybe even three and a half rounds. You can move those guys, get some more value, and then this team could win for 4 or 5 years. The top end at wide receiver is going to be difficult for anybody to compete with for a while. And so really how this team ages is the question. I love what he's done here for 2021. I think that even though it's going to be a battle between five or six teams, I would give the slight edge here for the 2021 championship.
That was a lot of fun to run through that roster. It's interesting just getting to break down and to share our thoughts, because a couple of thoughts there are a little bit different from each other, I suppose. In terms of being a loyal podcast listener, I always want to shout out, you can get yourself that 10% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass. All you have to do is enter the code RVRadio2021 at checkout, or go to rotoviz.com/podcast for additional information. We do have our contest ongoing for the Scott Fishbowl 11 entry. All you have to do is give a retweet off the tweet on my Twitter feed, that's at Overtime Ireland, and drop us a 5-star review on your favorite podcast app. Thanks to everyone who has dropped a review over the last week. Much, much appreciated. We'll be running that till next Tuesday, I believe, on next Tuesday, or either next Tuesday or next Thursday show, we'll be announcing the winner of that contest. So thanks again to everyone who has entered so far. That's going to do it for today's edition of the podcast. My name is Colm Kelly. You can follow me on Twitter at Overtime Ireland. My co-host is Sean Siegel. Check out all of Sean's great work up on rotoviz.com. Until we're back on Thursday with John Daigle of NBC Sports Edge, have a good one.
Thank you for listening to Overtime on RotoViz Radio. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. You can contact us via email at rotovizradio@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz with a discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.